Well, short as life is, we make it still shorter by the careless waste of our giftings. Welcome, everyone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Our host is author, teacher, and itinerant speaker, Kenneth Wong. Well, Samson is one of those tragic heroes of ancient times. His great strength was legendary, but Samson misused his gift of strength for his personal gain, rather than for its divine purpose, to champion the cause of God's people. However, as so often is the case, Samson's divine strength was accompanied by acute moral weakness. And as short as life is, Samson made it even shorter by the careless waste of his gifting. Still, this man is cited in the great faith listing in Hebrews 11. In just a moment, Kenneth reflects on Samson's birth and marriage in part one of Squandered Strength.
Hello, everyone. I trust you are keeping well. And it's good to be with you once again on Times of Refreshing. We're going to do a little Bible biography of a most interesting man and character in the Old Testament. And he's Samson. He would be someone whom most people would associate with towering and phenomenal strength, even though they may not know much about him from the scriptural point of view. He's very much like the Bible action man, the superhero. And probably more than any other character in the Bible, he is the one we normally associate with Herculean supernatural strength. So a tempting title for this talk would be something like The Avengers, because that was a key characteristic of Samson. He was always avenging himself, as we shall see later. And amongst the several comic superheroes from that movie, the one that comes most readily to mind when we think of Samson would be the Incredible Hulk. So that's what we think of first and foremost when we recall the name of Samson, someone divinely endowed with phenomenal physical strength. So if you're looking for someone to play the part of Samson, you definitely won't be looking at me, because I'm the direct opposite of what he was physically. But really what I want to do is to present to you the spiritual portrait of this man, as we come to know him from the pages of the Old Testament book of Judges. And that's the reason why I've entitled it Squandered Strength. For although he was divinely endowed with such immense physical strength to fulfill the purpose of God, for much of his life and in many of his exploits of physical strength, he squandered his strength on far lesser things than God intended. And that was his tragic testimony. To squander means to spend wastefully, to scatter your strength, instead of concentrating it on more noble causes. So this is primarily a study of squandered strength by a man who was divinely endowed with great strength to champion the cause of God's people, but who never truly attained his highest potential and the loftiest ideal that was befitting him. His was a complex character combination. He exhibited faith as well as folly. While he was reputed and famous for his incredible strength, yet he was also infamous for his moral weakness. And I suppose that is why Samson is not such a popular name from the Bible to be used as a personal name. And yet, for all that, Samson was mentioned in passing in that great chapter of faith heroes in Hebrews chapter 11. In this great faith academy or hall of faith, toward the end of the long list of notable men of faith in Bible history, in verse 32, we find Samson mentioned, together with some of his predecessors from the age of Judges. And what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets. It's as if the writer to the Hebrews had run out of space or time by then, and he had to just quickly rattle off some of the other names that readily crowd into his mind and just skip the rest and tail off. This reminds me of what often happens to me in preaching a message when I've run out of time. But there he was, Samson, mentioned not only with his fellow judges, but also in the same breath with the likes of David, the great king, and Samuel, the seer or prophet. And anyone who gets a mention in this great academy of faith must be there because of some remarkable exploit or act of faith. So this begs the question of what really Samson might be remembered for as far as faith is concerned. And if we're to follow the pattern of the writer to the Hebrews for the earlier faith heroes, what could be the citation written for Samson? What could be said concerning Samson that by faith, Samson did this? Well, let's begin to look at his life story to come to this conclusion. We're going into the Old Testament book of Judges, and I'm going to follow a very simple chronological order based on the four chapters that are devoted to the character of Samson. They're in Judges chapters 13 to 16, and this constitutes the longest number of chapters given to any of the judges in that book. So he's both an interesting as well as an important character in what may be called the Dark Ages of the Old Testament. That's the period of the judges. It was a period that is marked above all by this poignant summary statement, the very last verse of the last chapter of Judges. In Judges chapter 21, verse 25, these dark ages were described as follows. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. It was a period when Israel was often alternately oppressed and subjugated by her enemies, and then delivered by a champion in the form of a judge that he raised for the deliverance of Israel for a further period. And this cycle of peace and oppression carried on. Judges chapter 13 deal with the birth of Samson. Chapter 14, the marriage of Samson. Chapter 15, the life of Samson. And chapter 16, the death of Samson. These are, if you like, the major milestones in a person's life, which you might expect to see in the inside cover of a family Bible or on the epitaph of the man at the end of his life. Born, married, lived, died. Let's begin with chapter 13 of Judges, with the birth of Samson. Verse 1, again the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of the Philistines for 40 years. Now there was a certain man from Zorah, of the family of the Danites, whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren and had no children. And the angel of the Lord appeared to the woman and said to her, "Indeed now you are barren and have borne no children, but you shall conceive and bear a son." Like many a great son of faith in the scriptures, Samson was also born through the promise of God to a barren mother. We can think of many others. Among the patriarchs, we have Sarah giving birth to Isaac, Rachel to Joseph, Hannah to Samuel, and in the New Testament, Elizabeth to John the Baptist. So likewise, Samson was a son of promise. But the main point I want to draw out for you in this chapter is that the calling and consecration of Samson for his life purpose and work came from the time he was conceived in his mother's womb. Verse 5, "For behold, you shall conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come upon his head, for the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines." Now the law of the Nazarite is given in detail in Numbers chapter 6. It's that wonderful chapter at the end of which we have the well-known priestly blessing or benediction. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. But in the beginning of that chapter, we have all the detailed requirements pertaining to the law and the vow of a Nazarite. This is an act of consecration by a man or a woman, usually for a season of time to separate himself to the Lord, during which time there are certain things he should do and should not do to fulfill his vows. But what is unique and unusual in the case of Samson, was the revelation and indication by the angel of the Lord that he should be consecrated as a Nazarite from the womb throughout his whole life. And if you think about the spiritual significance of that for us as New Testament believers, is it not true that everyone who is truly born again from above by the Spirit of God, who has had a new birth in Jesus Christ, is entirely consecrated to God from his spiritual birth throughout his life? We are sanctified, we are made holy, and by that we mean that we are set apart and separated to God. And that's not a seasonal thing. It doesn't come and go. We don't enter into and come out of it. Our whole life is to be lived in sanctification. But this order to be a Nazarite was also extended to her mother. For in verse 7 we read, "The angel of the Lord said to me, 'Behold, you shall conceive and bear a son. Now drink no wine or similar drink, nor eat anything unclean, for the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb to the day of his death.'" And it's not surprising or difficult to see why this was so, because the fetus or the baby in the womb derives its life, is fed and nourished by the life of the mother. So if he was going to be consecrated as a Levite from his time in the womb, so should his mother be, at least for the time that she was carrying the baby. And this is a strong reminder to all of us that life begins with the fetus and embryo as it is conceived in the mother's womb, and not just at birth, which is the reason why abortion is an abomination before God. It's the taking of a life. In verse 12, we have Manoah, his father, coming onto the scene. Manoah said, "Now let your words come to pass. What will be the boy's rule of life and his work?" And that was made known to him as well. So what a blessed beginning and birth Samson had. He had a rich spiritual heritage with God's purpose in hand on him before he was born. And he had a goodly parentage. Few would have had a better spiritual start to life than he did. His great spiritual privileges, however, meant that greater spiritual responsibilities were demanded or expected of him. At the end of chapter 13, we read in verse 24, "So the woman bore a son and called his name Samson, and the child grew and the Lord blessed him." Now the name Samson means little son, S-U-N, so I guess mom and dad could have called him Sonny when he was a boy. But to his parents, with the background knowledge of the divine revelation given to them concerning the work and the destiny of his son, he was like a glimmer of hope and a ray of light beginning to shine into the dark ages of their time. And in the last verse 25 of chapter 13, "And the Spirit of the Lord began to move upon him." Soon, early in life, there began to be manifestations of God's special endowment for his servant. He probably began to show signs of special strength. It has to start somewhere, but it grows from the small beginning. And just like all spiritual gifts, they are meant for the fulfilling of God's purpose. They are not meant to feed our own fancy or pride. As for Samson's divine enabling by the Spirit of God, so with us. It can be used for God's glory, or it can be misused for our own gratification. But at this point, it was just beginning to be manifested. Next, let's move on to chapter 14, where we read about his marriage. Surprisingly and sadly, this was neither an arranged marriage nor divinely sought and led. Chapter 14, verse 1. "Now Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines." The Philistines were their enemies. Remember that they had been under their oppression and subjugation for the past 40 years. So here was Samson venturing out into enemy territory, oblivious and callous of the fact that this was so. And he was attracted to one of the Philistine girls. In verse 2, "So he went up and told his father and mother, saying, 'I have seen a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore, get her for me as a wife.' Then his father and mother said to him, 'Is there no woman among the daughters of your brethren or among all my people that you must go and get a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines. And Samson said to his father, Get her for me, for she pleases me well. From this incident, we begin to get the first clear sign of a disobedience and a disregard for authority, for custom, and for law, despite his being a Nazarite. He went against both his parental objections to marrying a Gentile woman, as well as the religious prohibitions for doing so. Now, may I remind us that this is not just a custom for the Jews then, but also for all Christians now. It is the issue of the unequal yoke, which Paul lays down very clearly in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14. Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? And what communion has light with darkness? So in the same way, believers in the Lord Jesus Christ should not be unequally yoked in marriage to unbelievers. In fact, they shouldn't even think about getting together with someone who is not a Christian and put themselves in a difficult, vulnerable, and compromising situation. A yoke is a wooden article designed to bring together two beasts of burden so that they can plow the ground together. But you don't yoke a camel with a cow, because they are different animals with different heights, different speeds of movement, who cannot plow together as complementary partners. That's the idea. Verse 5, So Samson went down to Timnah with his father and mother and came to the vineyards of Timnah. Now, to his surprise, a young lion came roaring against him, and the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and he tore the lion apart, as one would have torn apart a young goat, though he had nothing in his hand. But he did not tell his father or his mother what he had done. Here then is an initial outward manifestation, recorded for us for the first time, of the Spirit's divine strengthening and empowering, which he used justifiably for self-defense against a marauding lion. Verse 7, Then he went down and talked with a woman, and she pleased Samson well. After some time, when he returned to get her, he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion, and behold, a swarm of bees and honey were in the carcass of the lion. He took some of it in his hands and went along, eating. When he came to his father and mother, he gave some to them, and they also ate, but he did not tell them that he had taken the honey out of the carcass of the lion. In these actions, we begin to see a crass disregard by Samson concerning the Jewish laws, let alone the laws of the Nazarite vows. For all Jews are required not to defile themselves at any time by touching the carcass of a dead animal. But not only did Samson do that, he ate of the honey which was made by the swarm of bees in the dead carcass, and also offered it to his own parents without telling them about it. So it was doubly despicable and objectionable. Reading on from verse 10, So his father went down to the woman, and Samson gave a feast there, for young men used to do so. And it happened when they saw him that they brought 30 companions to be with him. If it was indeed a 7-day wedding feast amongst the Philistines, it would be very hard to imagine Samson as the host abstaining from liquor and drinks, which he was supposed to do as a Nazarite. Although we are not specifically told if he did join in the wine drinking, but if he did, then he would have broken yet another requirement of the Nazarite vow. So here we see Samson beginning to do all the wrong things. And if we're not told, one could hardly recognize him as the one whom the angel of the Lord had spoken of before his birth. We find in all this incident a revelation of a stubborn streak with Samson. He displayed a very strong self-will of wanting his own way. And above all, we see a very conspicuous weakness for women. He was a slave of his own passions and lusts, and that made him an easy victim to be manipulated by women, as we shall see on this occasion, which was but the first of many to follow. He displayed an impulsive and an impatient spirit, and he exemplified what Paul described very vividly in Galatians chapter 5, where in verse 16 he says, Walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. which is what Samson did not do most of the time. If he had walked in the Spirit, he would have been kept from fulfilling the lust of the flesh. The positive would have displaced the negative. And in Galatians chapter 5, verse 17, he goes on to say, "For the flesh lusts against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. And these are contrary to one another, so that you do not do the things that you wish." This was exactly what was happening to Samson here. He knew very well what was required of him, but there was a great tug, a great struggle within him, because he was not walking by the Spirit, but allowing himself to indulge in the flesh, so that he could not do what he inwardly knew he should do. He was hampered by the flesh, because he would not yield to the Spirit of God. Stay tuned tomorrow to see what happens next to Samson at his wedding feast. And may you continue to be refreshed by God's presence and reached by His Word.
Woe to all men with strong self-will and a weakness for women, for it is a slippery slope to personal destruction. Thank you, Kenneth. This is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. And join us again tomorrow when Kenneth presents part two of Squandered Strength. Right now, though, we would like to announce that our program, Times of Refreshing, will end its run on this FM radio station on the 28th of September for this season. Thank you so very much for tuning in as often as you have. You can continue to follow Times of Refreshing online at our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia. There you can listen to any of the archived programs, or you can download our iPhone app so you can directly access the broadcast messages and podcasts right from your iPhone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.